The Voice of the Poet presents Richard Wilbur, reading from his work.
A world without objects is a sensible emptiness. The tall camels of the spirit steer for their deserts, passing the last groves loud with the sawmill shrill of the locust, to the whole honey of the arid sun. They are slow, proud, and move with a stilted stride to the land of sheer horizon, hunting Traherne's sensible emptiness, there where the brain's lantern slide revels in vast returns. O connoisseurs of thirst, beasts of my soul who long to learn to drink of pure mirage, those prosperous islands are accursed that shimmer on the brink of absence. Auras, lusters, and all shinings need to be shaped and born. Think of those painted saints, capped by the early masters with bright, jauntily worn aureate plates or even merry-go-round rings. Turn, oh turn, from the fine slights of the sand, from the long empty oven where flames in flamings burn, back to the trees arrayed in bursts of glare, to the halo-dialing run of the country creeks, and the hills' bracken tiaras made gold in the sunken sun. Wisely watch for the sight of the supernova burgeoning over the barn, lamp shine blurred in the steam of beasts, the spirit's right oasis, light incarnate.
Mind. Mind in its purest play is like some bat that beats about in caverns all alone, contriving by a kind of senseless wit not to conclude against a wall of stone. It has no need to falter or explore. Darkly it knows what obstacles are there, and so may weave and flitter, dip and soar, in perfect courses through the blackest air. And has this simile a like perfection? The mind is like a bat, precisely, save that in the very happiest intellection, a graceful error may correct the cave. A Baroque Wall Fountain in the Villa Chiara. Under the bronze crown, too big for the head of the stone cherub whose feet a serpent has begun to eat, sweet water brims a cockle and braids down past spattered mosses, breaks on the tipped edge of a second shell, and fills the massive third below. It spills in threads, then, from the scalloped rim, and makes a scrim or summery tent for a fawn menage and their familiar goose. Happy in all that ragged, loose collapse of water, its effortless descent and flatteries of spray, the stocky god upholds the shell with ease, watching about his shaggy knees the goatish innocence of his babes at play. His fawness all the while leans forward slightly into a clambering mesh of water lights, her sparkling flesh in a cicular ecstasy, her blinded smile bent on the sand floor of the trefoil pool, where ripple shadows come and go in swift reticulum, more addling to the eye than wine, and more interminable to thought than pleasure's calculus. Yet since this all is pleasure, flash, and waterfall, must it not be too simple? Are we not more intricately expressed in the plain fountains that Moderna set before St. Peter's? The main jet struggling aloft until it seems at rest in the act of rising, until the very wish of water is reversed, that heaviness borne up to burst in a clear, high, cavorting head, to fill with blaze, and then in gauze delays, in a gnat-like shimmering, in a fine illumined version of itself, decline, and patter on the stones its own applause. if that is what men are or should be, if those water saints display the pattern of our arete, what of these showered fawns in their bizarre, spangled, and plunging house? They are at rest in fullness of desire for what is given. They do not tire of the smart of the sun, the pleasant water douse, and riddled pool below, reproving our disgust and our ennui with humble insatiety. Francis, perhaps, who lay in sister snow before the wealthy gate, freezing and praising, might have seen in this no trifle but a shade of bliss. That land of tolerable flowers, that state as near and far as grass, where eyes become the sunlight and the hand is worthy of water, the dreamt land toward which all hungers leap, all pleasures pass. Two voices in a meadow. A milkweed speaks. Anonymous as cherubs, over the crib of God, white seeds are floating out of my burst pod. What power had I before I learned to yield? Shatter me, great wind, I shall possess the field. A stone speaks. As casual as cow dung under the crib of God, I lie where chance would have me, up to the ears in sod. Why should I move? To move befits a light desire. The sill of heaven would founder, did such as I aspire. Advice to a prophet. When you come, as you soon must, to the streets of our city, mad-eyed from stating the obvious, not proclaiming our fall, but begging us in God's name to have self-pity, spare us all word of the weapons, their force and range, the long numbers that rocket the mind. Our slow, unreckoning hearts will be left behind, unable to fear what is too strange. Nor shall you scare us with talk of the death of the race. How should we dream of this place without us? The sun mere fire, the leaves untroubled about us, a stone look on the stone's face. Speak of the world's own change. Though we cannot conceive of an undreamt thing, we know to our cost how the dreamt cloud crumbles, the vines are blackened by frost, how the view alters. We could believe, if you told us so, that the white-tailed deer will slip into perfect shade, grown perfectly shy, the lark avoid the reaches of our eye, the jackpine lose its knuckled grip on the cold ledge, and every torrent burn as Xanthus once, its gliding trout stunned in a twinkling. What should we be without the dolphin's ark, the dove's return, these things in which we have seen ourselves and spoken? Ask us, prophet, how we shall call our natures forth, when that live tongue is all dispelled, that glass obscured or broken, in which we have said the rose of our love and the clean horse of our courage, in which beheld the singing locust of the soul unshelled, and all we mean or wish to mean. Ask us whether with the worldless rose our hearts shall fail us. Come demanding whether there shall be lofty or long standing, when the bronze annals of the oak tree close. A simile for her smile. Your smiling, or the hope, the thought of it, makes in my mind such pause and abrupt ease as when the highway bridge gates fall, balking the hasty traffic, which must sit on each side, massed and staring, while deliberately the drawbridge starts to rise. Then horns are hushed, the oil smoke rarefies. Above the idling motors one can tell the packet's smooth approach, the slip.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?